Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's a new edition of Terry's Talkin', the podcast that we do on Cleveland.com. I'm David Campbell, sports manager at Cleveland.com, alongside award-winning columnist for The Plain Dealer and Cleveland.com, Terry Pluto. Terry, how are you doing?
I am well, David.
Good. How you had a book, not a book event, but a talk last night at a bookstore in Parmatown. How did that one go? I know you had some great turnout for the first one.
They ran out of chairs, so that's good. I mean, that people had to stand. I think they had like more than 50, which is a nice thing for a Tuesday night. And as I mentioned to them, at Parmatown, it's walls of books. And I grew up just down the street on Westminster Drive, and I hadn't seen that house for a while. I don't know if you go buy a house where you grew up, you kind of looked at it going, that thing looked pretty small. This little ranch house on Westminster, and the neighborhood still seemed about the same. And yeah, I drove down a couple of the other streets where I had a friend named Debbie Gray lived on one and some others. So it was kind of cool to do that and to run into some of the people there. So those have been Willoughby Library the week before are really the first two events other than some ministry stuff I've done since I've come back. And it's been great just to see the crowds of people come out.
Yeah, I know what you're saying about your childhood house, too. It seems like your whole universe is the house in your neighborhood, and it just mm-hmm. seems immense when you're a little kid. And then you go back when you're growing up, and you're like, wow, it's a lot smaller than I remember. It's funny how that happens.
Yeah, I mean, I still remember the address of the house. I can't remember the addresses. I've lived several other places since then, and I can't remember those, but I do remember that. I remember the phone number is Tuxedo 4-8181. So I have no idea what happens if you dial that now.
The old phone numbers with the words.
Yeah, with the party lines and that kind of stuff too.
Those were the
days.
Is she
off yet? Well, no, not about her grandmother again.
All right, Terry, let's get into the Browns here. The Browns are wrapping up OTAs tomorrow. We're taping this on Wednesday, and they are wrapping up OTAs on Thursday. On Tuesday, out in Berea, the one practice they're having out there this week, Deshaun Watson talked to the media for the first time since his introductory press conference. And you thought it was a good thing that they had him speak and that he went out and met with the media and answered some questions.
Right, because from his point of view, this is it's a PR battle. You got two of these cowboy lawyers down in Texas. And that's, I mean, they'll tell you that's kind of how they deal with Busby and Harden, going at it, trying every PR thing that they can. And everybody's talking about Watson except Watson. And so I thought it was important for him to get out and say his piece. I mean, he's really not moving out of the, I disrespected no one, I assaulted no one, I did nothing wrong. That's his stance. He's sticking to it. I want to clear my name. Basically indicating he doesn't want to settle the lawsuits. He seemed really more relaxed and better prepared for this one. But as I wrote in my column, David, in the end, it's really kind of come down to how the NFL rules and how the courts eventually rule with all those civil suits. But I think Browns fans needed to see him anyway.
Yeah, one thing I thought that struck me was at his introductory press conference, Mary Kay Cabot from our staff here asked him, do you think you need help? Do you think you need counseling? And he flat out said no at that press conference. And yesterday she said, have you gone to any counseling or anything like that? And he said, yes. So I thought that was interesting that he says that it sounds like he's getting some help off
yeah,
the
he
field
should.
In terms of working through this.
Right. I mean, even if his best case scenario is that really I didn't do a thing wrong and, you know, all this is concocted for them to get money, that's kind of their stance. You're still the psychological toll on anybody going through that is significant. And, you know, I'm not going to get into the whole thing other than there's just way too many massage therapists. And that sort of is a red flag of something or other. And we could let the professionals slog their way through that psychological question.
All right, Terry. So yesterday was practice in Berea. On Tuesday, they had a full practice out there. And I wanted to get your thoughts on this. So today, they take a bus down to the Hall of Fame in Canton, and they practice at the field down there for half an hour. Wasn't a full session. On the way down, Kevin Stefanski decides that he thinks it would be really cool for the team to watch the A Football Life episode featuring Jim Brown that the NFL Network produced so that they could learn about Jim Brown, his legacy, the history of the team. He invited Marion Motley's family to come down and Bill Willis's family to come down to watch practice. And we've seen basketball hoops at practice this spring. I wanted to see what you thought about all that. And my theory is, and I don't know if you agree with this, but we heard last year players talking about the disconnect and the lack of chemistry on the team, but not only between the offense and the defense, but sometimes even within the units. And I'm wondering if this is a concerted effort by the Browns to really team bonding or whatever you want to call it, just to make it so it's not, all right, let's run this drill and now let's do 7-on-7 and now we're going to go 11-on-11 and go home. I think adding this stuff around football is kind of the symbol that they're really trying to make this more of a cohesive team. What do you think?
Well, there's a couple of things going on. One is they should go down the Hall of Fame every year and have some sort of program. I mean, it's right down the road from them. And you want the younger players to know what the older players did and who they are. It's a perfect place to do it. And on top of that, like they did, you know, there's so many different good documentaries they could do. You know, Football Life is one. And in fact, I was interviewed for that. I remember a long time ago. I can't recall if I survived it, but I remember I thought I was so glad they were doing it. It was a really interesting project. And so that was really good. I thought it was odd that Miles Garrett said, I don't want to go into the Hall of Fame until, you know, I'm in it. It was just, I thought it was a joke, but he sounded kind of sincere about that. Where, you know, Miles should take a page. That's one thing about LeBron James from even going back in his days at St. V. He was always not only respectful of the older players and the history of the game, he knew a lot about it. You know, he watched videos and things. He cared about that stuff. He loved it when Oscar Robertson or Julius Erving or one of those players would show up at some event where he was. He paid them really homage and respect. And I really think that would have been one of the things where it's a chance for Miles to go in a different direction and say, gee, I really want to look at who those players are so that I could figure out how to get into the Hall of Fame. So I thought it was a mistake on his part. By the way, I like Miles a lot. He does a lot of good work. None of this is to negate that. But I just think sometimes these guys take a swing and miss, and somebody just should point it out to them.
Yeah, it's hard when you're that young, kind of, you don't sometimes have that perspective, and that's kind of what made LeBron just kind of a really interesting character. In
yeah,
that regard.
He always liked that. I mean, I'll tell you, another guy who was like that was Albert Bell. Knew the history of the game. And one of the most, Albert would usually talk to me maybe once or twice a year. And he's having a big first half. So I'm interviewing him about, he actually just sat down with me for about a couple of weeks before the All-Star break. And we're talking about something. And he says to me, do you know, there's a record I might be able to break by the All-Star break. And I go, what is that? Hank Greenberg had the record for the most RBIs at the All-Star break. I forgot what it was. I was surprised he knew who Hank Greenberg was, which is really great. Played for the Tigers, first base in the 1930s. B, he knew what the record was. And C, he wanted it. So I think he just came up short. But I asked him about some other records and things. And he knew a lot about baseball history. And not just, Babe Ruth is good. But a lot, like I mentioned, you know, Hank Greenberg or Al Rosen, who played for the Indians back then, and some others, it turned into a engaging talk about that, and it showed a side of Albert that you don't see that often. And I just think that I hope the Browns use more of that. They have so many former players around, so much history is right in their backyard, and the guy should get a chance to connect with that.
Yeah, and you made me think of Mike Tyson. I mean, even when he was 20 years old, he was watching old movies of old boxers from the early 1900s. You're right, the great ones seem like they're really students of the game. I think that's pretty regular to see. So,
Yeah,
all right,
because
Terry,
you
yeah,
know
go ahead.
sometimes too the players, that's some old guy. You see Jim Brown now, last time I saw him, he's on a cane, he's all beat up. But when you watch those videos of him, it still is the greatest running back I've ever seen. It's just phenomenal. And I remember when I was writing one of my books, I kind of looked at his career at Syracuse, not just football. A lot of people knew that he was a tremendous lacrosse player. But one year he decides to go out for basketball. He averages 13 points.
That's
I
something,
think he
huh?
came off the bench or something. It's like he was playing like everything.
Yep, nobody will be like him again, that's for sure. So, Terry, let's talk about Baker Mayfield. I know it's a thing that's not going away anytime soon, it appears, but you've been kind of writing about the talks that have been ongoing, apparently, between the Browns and the Panthers. And where do you see this ending up? And I guess the question everybody's asking this week is, do you think there's a chance that Mayfield could be starting against the Browns on opening day on September 11th? But
Sure.
talk about the Carolina angle and kind of what you've been hearing about where this is headed.
Well, I don't care what the coaching staff said down there. They had a thing last week about how Sam Darnold had like the greatest practice I've ever seen. The problem with Sam Darnold is the games have not been the greatest anybody's ever seen, and he's thrown more interceptions over the last 2 years than he's thrown touchdown passes. His last year with the Jets and then first year with Carolina. I just can't believe they're going to go into the season with him as their starter. And so I believe they were in on the Watson bidding early. I know they try to make a trade for him and that, so they're looking for a quarterback. And the Browns, they can't just leave themselves wide open with Brissett as your only quarterback and Josh Dobbs, who's thrown a grand total of 17 passes in the NFL, as your backup. You can't do that. You've got to have another guy in here. And, some people say, well, even if he gets suspended, say it's only six games, I still want another guy in here. I just want a guy you could put in the game in case Brissett gets hurt. One person from the Browns said, well, remember, we picked up Nick Mullins right before opening day a year ago. Okay, Nick Mullins, whatever. It's fine. I think he's back with the 49ers. He's somewhere else right now. And there's always those guys floating around. Not that I think Darnold's all that great, but I did check on his character. That's what I wanted to know. And they said he's really a good guy. He could probably handle the backup stuff if need be. So, I would probably make that trade because the only way it looks not worth it would be if Watson gets off without a suspension. Now, maybe they'll know all this by July 4th. That seems to be the latest rumblings I'm hearing. Of course, there's been a lot of rumblings, and a lot of them just should have been, those faucets should have been turned off because they're wrong. But we're going to find out if that's correct. So maybe they might even have something in place, that they're just kind of waiting to see what kind of suspension comes down for Watson. But it's just that the salaries match up, the needs are there. They need something better than Darnold. And the Browns need something better than the Joshua Dobbs.
And all the pieces might fit as you
And they're
wrote. So,
both contracts end up at the end of the year. So in other words, you're not buying into something that's going to haunt you long term.
yes or no, will Baker Mayfield be starting for the Panthers in the
I'm
opener?
going to say yes.
All right. I think so too.
I do. I mean, it's just common sense. You sit there unless they turn around and surprise us all, make a trade for Jimmy Garoppolo or something. It would have to be something like that. We talked a week ago about Garoppolo and the Browns and that. I kind of asked around. If it's going on, I can't find any even whisper of that.
Well, and there's two reasons why. One is he's making 22 million, I think, for this upcoming season. The other thing is I don't know that he can throw the ball down the field outside the hash marks.
And you know, and he's recovering from shoulder surgery and throwing arm shoulder surgery.
Yeah.
So,
a lot
but
of
I've always liked him.
There.
You know, Jimmy Garoppolo wins games. He doesn't stay healthy. That was one of the top people with the Browns told me. He goes, one of the issues, remember, we like tried to get him a few years ago from New England. And that was a strange thing. They were told no. And then like a week later, Belichick calls up San Francisco, just trades him for a second round pick. The Browns would have done a couple seconds. It was a very weird deal back then when Garoppolo was with New England and he got traded. And the whole thing was odd.
Well, and I just think he's the kind of guy who can win because of the guys around him. He can't help a team get over the top in a game or in a season. I just think he's
but,
a game.
You know, if we're looking at treading water, David, for this year.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you look at this. I mean, let's talk about the offense for a minute. Okay, you're Jimmy Garoppolo, or even if you're Darnold, you walk into this, who's in your backfield?
Nick Chubb, Kareem Hunt, and a
Keep
great
going.
Offensive line. Yeah.
Keep going. Johnson. You got Darius Johnson. Yeah, they really like Ford. I was hearing very good things. They thought Ford could catch passes. They found he can catch passes. So you got four of them there. You know, and then you have Felton, whatever he is. But then the offensive line, look at it.
It's a good situation.
Yeah. Receivers is the only thing there. But David Bell's done very well in camp. And you've got Amari Cooper. You know, you got Donovan Peoples-Jones. You got a lot of, you know, you could use Kareem Hunt to split him out, all kinds of stuff you can do. So whoever this quarterback is, it doesn't have to be great. But I just don't want that. That's why they think, by the way, that Brissett would be fine as a starter. That's their view. But, you're sprained ankle away or whatever from Joshua Dobbs. I know I'm harping on that, but that's who it is. Look at the roster.
No, that's the truth. And like you said, it's one injury away and everything they work for this season can be, like you said, one sprained ankle and all go down the toilet because of not having a good backup. So
they probably could put Darnold in a system that need be where he doesn't have to do a ton, you know, just like that. But Garoppolo is sort of the ultimate game manager. You know, he won't mess it up, and he's real smart. Everybody's lined up in the right spot. The other guys like him. And, okay, he's not a Super Bowl winner, but he's pretty good with a good group.
All right. Two options there. We'll see how that ends up, Terry. So let's move to the defense. There's not a lot of discussion about the defense with all this drama going on the offensive side of the ball. And there's a pretty good young linebacker group here that's coming up. And I want you to talk about that for a minute because everybody talks about the DBs and everybody talks about Clowney and Myles Garrett. But this linebacker group, the Browns have some high hopes, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And that's what I was surprised when I was talking to one of my sources. Now, the Andrew Berry front office, of course, they went in big for those LSU guys, Jacob Phillips and Grant Delpit, Delpit being a safety. But they sometimes consider him a linebacker because they think he's good in the box, too. So you have those two. And then you have, J.O.K. as a linebacker. And then you also have Anthony Walker. You know, talkie-talkie's like, probably the bottom of that list, but they feel even though their system doesn't accent linebackers as much as many others, they think that this is your year to really break through with Phillips, break through with Delpit, JOK in his second season. Those guys are in their third, but they had significant injury problems in their past. You know that they're ready to go. I was thinking just now, like in terms of key guys, David, who are the guys on that defense who predate Andrew Berry? You got Miles, and you have Greedy Williams, and you have nobody else that comes to mind for me.
Nope. I'd have to run through, but I think you're right.
I got to look at this for Sunday notes, but it's just like it's been a total – rehashing. I guess talkie-talkie, I think, was drafted by Dorsey. So that would be the other one. But the fact is, and there might be some bench guys that's still around. But let's say Greedy Williams doesn't start, talkie-talkie doesn't start. I mean, the only guy who predates them, who's going to start, is Miles.
Do you think this defense can be top five this season?
No, but top 10.
Top 10.
Top 10, I do. Yeah, the tackles. I know they. If you think they diminish linebackers, actually what they really diminish is tackles. They just sort of think these big guys will just, you know, take some out, put some in. We have Tommy Togia and Jordan Elliott and, you know, a few of these others. But you could tell they've never spent much money on that, nor do they intend to. But if you want that top five defense, you would like one defensive tackle that you kind of go, yeah, that guy's good. I can't say that about anybody with the Browns. But in terms of, as they were telling me, the back end being the linebackers and the four defensive backs, they believe that those guys would be so much better now because they've played together for a while. You know, you're not rolling in John Johnson for the first time. And remember, they had Troy Hill there before. Whether, you know, and you have Newsome, you have all these people who have been in the system, and they think that they'll just be able to do more with it. Joe Woods can experiment more, and that they will be that kind of athletic defense that can run quickly side to side. That's what they really wanted, a defense that just not just wins the 40-yard dash, but is really quick laterally. I mean, JOK, that's one of the things he can really do is run sideways. They say Phillips, I'd like to see more of him, can do that. So I'm anxious to see that them in play because, you know, let's just put Watson on the shelf for a minute because he may be there for more than that. It's still a good team. It's a good team.
Yeah, and what we're seeing now, Terry, is the continuity that the Browns have never had since coming back in 1999. They've had coaches who've been here for a while now. They've got players who've been here for a while. You don't have to start every mini camp or OTAs teaching people the base defense.
If Stefanski gets through the season, he will be the longest tenured coach since, go ahead.
Romeo Crennel.
Yep. 05 to 09. How about 08? 4 years.
And happy retirement to Romeo. He just retired.
And the second longest right now, Hugh Jackson at 2.5 years.
And that's all you need to know about how the Browns have done since they came back. All right, Terry, let's take a break. We ran a little long on the Browns, but some good stuff there. Hey, when we come back, let's talk about the sensation, the phenomenon that is Jose Ramirez. I want to get your thoughts on the MVP race this season and where it's at and where you think it might go. And then we'll talk some Cavaliers a little bit. And we want to talk about your Faith in You column this week. You got some great stories from people about Father's Day memories. And we've got some good Hey Terry questions. So we'll be back in a second on Terry's Talk.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, we're back on Terry's Talking. David Campbell and Terry Pluto. We're going to talk a little Guardians right now. Terry, the Guardians are 30-27. They're getting hot. They're only 2.5 games behind the Minnesota Twins in the division. Who would have thought that? And they got a big series at Minnesota next week. But let's start with the phenomenon that is Jose Ramirez. Last night, and Paul Hoynes, our colleague, wrote about this today, he did just about everything a baseball player could do to win the game for the Guardians last night. Drove in two runs with a single, started a next at bat, and I think it was in the sixth inning with an 0-2 count, worked a walk out of it, stole second, the ball gets away on a bad throw, he goes to third and eventually scores, And then defensively, he got Bieber out of a tough situation by turning a double play with a nice stop at third. And then in extra innings, I mean, this guy is doing everything for the Guardians. And I guess what I want to get your thoughts on is, should he be leading the MVP race right now? And where do you see him fitting into how people are seeing him nationally?
I don't think they're really seeing him nationally at all. They may see a bit of here on SportsCenter or whatever, but he's not in the national conversation because it's Cleveland. He doesn't make commercials. You know, he's very low-keyed. I mean, there's some bunch of people that probably still think Frankie Lindor is better because he's in New York. I got news for you. You're wrong. I just looked here. MLB.com just did it. This is as of June 2nd. A poll. They have Mike Trout. They've polled 59 baseball writers. Mike Trout first. And then they came up with Aaron Judge second. They have Ramirez third. So that's pretty good, actually, for the voters, you know.
Well, why don't we run through some of these guys and
Yeah,
their
so that's
stats
it.
just to give
I
the
was
listeners a
surprised to
little
see
background?
Ohtani was fourth, but go ahead.
Yeah, so I was looking. I'm curious what the odds are sometimes on some of these things,
Okay.
and I was looking on a website called Sports Betting Dime, which is pretty well known. Aaron Judge is the favorite right now at +125. That means if you bet $100 and he wins, you get 125 back. So Shohei Ohtani is +325. Mike Trout is +650, and then Jose Ramirez is fourth at +750. So he's fourth in this odds. In terms of stats, Aaron Judge, 24 homers, 48 ribbies, batting .313, and he's got an OPS of 1.059. Jose has 16 homers, 62 RBIs, which leads the major leagues, 10 steals, including one last night, 296 batting average, and an OPS of 1.037. So the OPSs are 1.059 to 1.037. Not much to choose from there. But like you said, Aaron Judge does commercials. He's all over TV all the time. Every time the Yankees and the Red Sox play, it's like a national holiday for ESPN, and they promote the hell out of it. In the meantime, the Guardians aren't seen it nationally as much. Jose Ramirez, he doesn't do a lot of post-game interviews that, you know, are on national TV the way that Aaron Judge gets an opportunity to do. And every time you turn on SportsCenter, Aaron Judge is hitting a home run, and Jose Ramirez is hitting a single, double, stealing a couple bases. They play different games, and I just think the deck is a little stacked against Jose in a lot of ways, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And then the other two, we have Ohtani and Mike Trout, you know, even though the Angels stink for the most part, they're in a big market. Ohtani is an international figure. Trout is actually like Jose in that he could care less about publicity, but he is just such a dominating player. Of those, I mean, it's sort of hard to classify Ohtani because he's a pitcher too. You know, I started to say Jose's the best all-around player, but you got one guy's a pitcher. But yeah, I'll say this, nobody gets more out of their ability than Jose Ramirez in the major leagues. I just find what he does to be phenomenal. A guy from my Hey Tarik and the Guardians coming up suggested he wanted to kind of get a nickname for Jose, and he called it Jose Hustle. And I was thinking, you know, more like, should almost be like a song, you know, do the Jose Hustle. And then I would take all those tapes of him running out from under his helmet, sliding head first, you know, his uniform is filthy, you know, ripping a line drive down there. I mean, he's got a ton of power. How does he have all these RBIs with this lineup in front of him? Miles Straw's been in the, you know, he's so deep in the tank, you need a submarine right now, and he's been leading off. You know, they switched set number two hitters in front of him, sometimes Kwan, sometimes Rosario. Now they've both come out of their slumps. But it's not as if he's at a load of line. And behind him, you know, everybody knows you really want to go with Miller, Owen Miller as your cleanup hitter. I mean, it's really, you know, sometimes it's Naylor, but there's nobody there that you look at and you fear. And Jose is just, it's just a phenomenal year. And starting with him pushing his agent to get the extension done and then playing like he has. It's a great Cleveland story.
Yeah, and Terry, I want to go back to that question you mentioned. From the gentleman's name is Bill Fainrick. I hope I said your name right, Bill.
Yeah.
And he says, "Hey, Terry, do you think Jose Hustle is a great nickname for Jose Ramirez?" So here's my idea, Terry. What do you think of this? We should have people go on TikTok and do a dance called the Jose Hustle. And,
sure.
And we'll have Cleveland.com kind of put this out there and see what we get back.
Yeah, you know,
but
you
like
can
it could
wig,
be,
you can wear a wig like a Jose wig.
Yeah,
and
you come in off the screen, you come out of nowhere, you run in place frantically for 30 seconds, you knock your hat off, right? I'm trying to think what else would be in the Jose Hustle, and then at the end somebody comes over and tells you Aaron Judge has a better dance or something.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, just you know, here's the other part about where you talk about Judge, Ohtani. All those other elite players, they look like ball players. Jose looks like a guy, you know, just some guy. And that's another thing that's why it's so endearing for that. So I really believe that if you're coaching a high school team or whatever, heck, even a college team, do some cut-ups of Jose's hustle. Put together a 90-second or two-minute video of this guy and say, look at this guy play. Why don't we play like this? Because none of this stuff here, you know, I'm talking about us taking the extra base, that kind of thing. None of this stuff here is anything but effort and smarts. Because how he steals, he's stolen like 84% bases of success rate in his career. I mean, is his speed average? Maybe. I don't know. Certainly no more than that. But he's smart.
He's smart in every way. So I was trying to think if they ever put a statue up of Jose outside Progressive Field, what would it be of? Like, because he does so many different things. He'd be, you know, how he struts. He plays like he's mad.
Yeah.
And I was trying to think how you'd capture that in a statue. Just some of the stuff you're talking about. It's like it would be a really tough thing to capture the spirit and the attitude.
Flying. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be the helmet flying. That'd be a really interesting thing to design if you
I'm
were.
I'm sure
a,
there's
an
artists
artist
out there even listening to this and come up with something for it, but. You know, the old thing, well, he's a ball player. That's exactly right. I mean, Mike Trout's another. These guys are all physical specimens. I forgot to mention Trout in that group of Judge and Ohtani. You know, they're incredible physical. I mean, the Yankees are just huge when you play those guys. I mean, like when the Guardians play them, it's like they're the junior varsity, and this is the older kids, you know, when you look at them physically. Tom Hamilton and I were talking about that. So it'll be fun to see what they do. You know, when you look at the Guardians too, David, what I'm really pleased at is how Stephen Kwan's bounced out of that. He had a great April, rookie of the month. He hits 175 in May. And the last I looked in June, he's like 340. So he got right back out of that funk he was in. And that means he did some adjustments. And he's another guy that's really smart.
And I was just thinking, Chris Fedor, who covers the Cavs for us, I think he tweeted last night, the Guardians are starting to look really Cavsy,
mm-hmm.
in terms of the way they play the right way, they hustle, and I thought that
yeah.
it was a great phrase. So anyway, the Guardians.
Yeah, David,
ahead,
would you put Kwan in the leadoff spot?
I don't know. I think with somebody like Miles Straw, you got to let him work it out a little bit longer, maybe, and then
mm-hmm.
maybe make the move, but. He's your leadoff man, and you're riding with him. I think they stick with him for a while longer. What would you do?
I would maybe wait another week or so. If not, I would drop him down. Because I know the long-term plan for Straw was to bat him eighth or ninth. They gave him the money. I mean, they don't want him to hit 220. But they're thinking this guy's like a 260 hitter, a little over 700. But even now where he's not hitting, the ball's just hit. He just goes and catches it. You know, it's like he runs to the right spot all the time. In fact, if a lot of us listening maybe don't remember Rick Manning playing center field. You know, I covered Manning when he was there. Manning played it much like Straw plays it. Right spot, quick. Manning's bat was suspect. But in terms defensively, I think he won one gold glove. He should have won more. And Straw is – they want that – you know, they want the old strong up the middle. They want that anchor in center and that catcher. And that they'll give up a lot of offense for those two positions.
Yeah, I think they leave him there for a while. I think a week is about right, Terry. I think you're on it. So we'll see. So the Guardians are finishing up their series at Colorado. Then this weekend, they are at the Dodgers Friday through Sunday, and then they're off Monday, and they have a series with the Twins Tuesday through Thursday next week that could decide who's in first place when it's all over. Crazy to think about, so.
It's phenomenal to see what Eli Morgan's doing. I mean, this guy was considered a fringe fifth starter. His best pitch was a changeup. He supposedly had control. He barely broke 90 miles an hour. You know, he's worked and built up his strength. So when he comes out of the bullpen now for an inning or two, he's throwing 93 because he doesn't have to pace himself at all. But yet he still has the control and he still has a changeup. Now he had, you know, the one mistake against Oakland, the one game. But what he has done in other games is just terrific. And that has been a huge lift to the bullpen. Because remember, Karinchak was supposed to be this guy. I don't know what's, I mean, he's down in Columbus. I don't know when he's coming up or what. Who knows? And then Class A, he, you know, Class A could make the All-Star team. I don't know if they'll pick him, but he could.
Yeah, I know Terry Francona was saying he wished he would have pulled Bieber one batter earlier last night and gotten Eli Morgan in. And I'm wondering next time, you know, Terry Francona loves to trust guys he can trust, veterans especially. And I bet he's going to be building more and more trust in Eli Morgan as this thing goes along. And next time he might make that decision one
And he
batter
may have to
earlier.
look at the simply the I hate to make that 100 pitches into a magic number, but maybe with Bieber it's a magic number right now because he's coming off last year where he missed almost 3 months. And his velocity isn't as good as it was. And that doesn't, by the way, really worry me a whole lot because his breaking stuff, his control, his smarts, it's all there. But, you know, maybe right now you get 6 innings, he gets up right near 100, you got to turn over the bullpen, at least at this stage. Now, you want to try something in the playoffs if they get there, whatever, but do it that way. Because it's happened twice, you know, where he's, kind of got himself into trouble as he went along.
All right, so some big games coming up for the Guardians. Terry, we're running a little long here, but I did want to talk about the Cavs real quick. I was listening to the our Wine and Gold Talk podcast the other day with Chris Fedor and Hayden Grove, and they were talking about Colin Sexton. We've been talking about Colin Sexton, and Chris Fedor said something interesting that the people in Colin Sexton's camp are wanting him to get a contract that starts with the number two in the near future, and everybody else seems to be thinking that the contract will start with the number one. So it's like 20 million versus, and they were talking about how a lot of people around the league think 10 million is more
Yeah, that's
in
where
the
I'm at.
neighborhood. What's your take on that? You're closer to
Well, I mean,
10,
we could
right?
talk, you know, that's the old and you and I want hair too, so that's fine. We could talk about it, but you know, why is he getting 20 million? He played 11 games and then was out the rest of the year with knee surgery. If you rank the players on the Cavs, and I did this past Sunday, you know, you have Mobley's number one, you have, and you could say maybe Garland is ahead of the game now, but Mobley's got the most all-around gifts going. Garland's two, Jared Allen's three, and I have Lauri Markkanen four there. Not That's not to diminish Collins' scoring, but when you, because remember, a basketball team is based on players fitting different roles, all that kind of stuff. Collin on this team is a bench guy. 20 minutes, 24 minutes a game, come off and put up points. That's what he does. You can't play him and Garland together for a serious length of time and expect to make the playoffs. And what I would simply tell him is the qualifying offer is like $7.5 million. You could take that for 1 year. Go out, have a great year. You'll be a free agent. Maybe you'll get your number two the following year. I kind of doubt it, but that's the way you know, go build your volume. I'm sorry, your value up by playing a volume, in other words, a volume number of games.
The ever-present prove-it contract, as they call it,
Yeah.
right? Yep.
That's
All right,
kind of how it
Terry.
is in life for most of us.
Yep. Your faith column this week. Let's talk about that, Terry. Faith in You, which will be on cleveland.com on Saturday morning and in Sunday's Plain Dealer, Father's Day weekend. And you do this a lot where you ask people for their favorite memories of their fathers and mothers around this time of year. And you got some remarkable responses. And you started the column off talking about you and your own father and how important sports was to you. Growing up, especially going to Indians games at the old stadium.
Well, a couple of things stood out. I mean, one of them is a lady named Elaine wrote in, And she said, when I was a teenager, my father and I, we really weren't getting along all that well and that kind of stuff. But she said she noticed Brian Sipes' picture in the paper. This is so goes way back to the early 80s. And she just thought he was kind of interesting, cute, all that. So she started talking to her dad about Brian Sipes. And that led to talking about the Browns. And that led to father-daughter talking about stuff they could talk about. And that led to reaffirming their relationship to the point of where they would get together every Sunday. And that went on up to 2 weeks before he died. And, you know, sports isn't the only thing in families, but it could be part of the glue that holds them together. One of my favorite stories, it came from Les Levine's brother, you know, Les, the late sportscaster, Bill Levine, said, did Les ever tell you about when our dad burned Babe Ruth's suit? And he went on to say that the Levine family owned a cleaners right across the street from Old League Park on Lexington Avenue. And this, how about this? When the visiting players would come in town, they would have their suits and their clothes taken over to the Levine cleaners to get during the game while they were there to get cleaned. Well, Les's father decided he's going to help, and I guess of all things, he got in a Babe Ruth suit and he put in one of those 50-pound irons on it and burned the Babe suit with it. So they had a lot of damage control there, but you know that's it's always funny to get the family lore about things. And I also know that Father's Day is very painful for some because they didn't have a biological dad that was there or he was distant or abusive and that. So I also ask people to send in, you know, do you have a father figure, a grandfather and that? And that led to some really interesting stories too. But I can tell you this, as somebody all the years I've done in jail ministry and ministry at the Haven Arrest of City Mission, the impact of a father and the missing of a father, it's really big. And even if they kind of fight you and your dad when they're younger, later on they really appreciate it. And when they don't have it, it is a huge hole. And that's why I give grandfathers, uncles, friends of the family, people who step in and do this a ton of credit. And they are the ones that maybe you don't get recognized till later on, but they're so important.
Yeah, and there are some really touching stories in there about people who did have somebody step in and really made a difference. So be sure to catch that this weekend. It's a really great read. All right, let's do a few Hey Terry questions before we get out of here. Terry, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right. This one is from Bob Levin in Fairfax, Virginia. He says, Hey Terry, has the signing of Deshaun Watson led to a noticeable decrease in clicks or interest in articles and podcasts on the Browns? I, for one, have been paying a lot less attention because I hated the Browns signing Watson. So just for a little background, like Terry, you and I, we don't really write stories based on how many clicks we think they're going to get. We do stuff that we think is interesting to people that read our stuff and listen to it. But just to answer, it's been the same. Like there's the same amount of interest as ever in the Browns, and we're going to cover it the way we're going to cover it and the way we think is right. But in terms of what you've been hearing from fans in terms of response, do you think that Bob's have a lot of people checked out on the Browns, or are they kind of waiting?
I think they have. They say they have, but I don't think they did. How's that? Although right now we're in the stage where people are reading this. For those who think the Browns should be slammed for signing Watson, they're kind of reading the stories to see if it's going in that direction. And then others are hoping that he could end up being the quarterback. They're reading the stories to see if it's going in that direction. So, I mean, the readership is high. Look, David, we've both been around here. I mean, the readership was high when they were 0-16. I mean, it's not as high as when they're better, but it's just phenomenal. I've often said you could put an orange helmet on the 50-yard line and just sell tickets for $5 each and see 50,000 people go into the park and stare at it.
You should write a book, Terry, about how popular the Browns are in Cleveland. You could call it Brownstown or something.
Brownstown, maybe. Yeah, Brownstown 64. And I mean, you know, I mean, at the bookstore, I'm holding up False Start, what I learned from watching the Browns, Browns Blues. I mean, what a miserable situation.
All right, let's take one more, Terry. And this one is from Terry Toaz, Toaz. Terry, I hope I got your name right. It says, "Hey Terry, I'd love to know why the Guardians didn't think enough of Oscar Gonzalez to put him on the 40-man roster. It's scary to think they could have lost him if the Rule 5 minor league draft had not been canceled this season." And well, you wrote about this, that this actually could have happened. They might have seen him.
They
plucked
could
from
have.
The roster,
but how
right?
about this? He also was a minor league free agent. So that meant if somebody really wanted him, they could have just jumped in right away. You know, Oscar said he wanted to stay here and he felt comfortable to re-sign. But, you know, the moment he hit the free agent thing, somebody said, "Guy, you hit 31 homers. You know, we'll call. We'll give him a big league contract. You know, we'll bring him in." Nobody did. They looked at, I think this is where analytics sometimes gets in the way of common sense. They looked at the fact that he doesn't walk much. And I think right now he still only has one walk in like 70 plate appearances. And they've kind of held that against him. But he also doesn't strike out that much. You know, that's what I would counter with. Now, what hurt him is in 2019, he came up at the end of the year to Akron. He had like 100 plate appearances and batted like 180 with one homer. Then remember, 2020, there was no minor league baseball. He falls off of all the even Cleveland top 25 prospect list. So he surprises everyone last year, and I think a lot of scouts from other teams wrote him off. And he hits the home runs, but they're looking at he only had 22 walks and 500 plate appearances and all that stuff. And he, you know, he had to break the label. Even in spring training, I was hearing, well, you know, he doesn't strike out that much, but he swings the balls out of the strike zone. He pops them up, and we've seen him swinging some bad pitches. But my goodness, he hits the ball to right field, and I saw a lot of tape of him hitting the ball to right field at Columbus this year and last year. So it's like, this is a classic thing. And by the way, to make the mystery of Oscar a little odder, you would think, well, this is a guy they signed for 10 cents out of the Dominican Republic. No, in 2014, they gave him 300 grand. That was the biggest bonus they gave to any Dominican player that year. So they liked him in the beginning. Then they got off of him. Then they nearly lost him, but nobody else wanted him. So they kept him, and now he's playing in the outfield.
Starting in right field and batting cleanup lately. Go figure, some story, huh? Yeah. All right, Terry, let's
baseball,
take one more.
You, get, you know, David, that's the other cool thing. You do get that in baseball because you have the minors. You have players literally coming from all over the world. And it's just it's fun to watch that. You know, I've talked to people, even the best scouts, when they get around, and you could get them talking about the guys that they were so sure of. One way or the other, couldn't play or could play. And one scout told me, he said, you know, one of the safest ways is to just basically say, "I can't play." You'll be right about 90% of the time.
Yeah, that was a big theme in the movie Moneyball. It's you don't know. You can't project what some 18-year-old kid is going to do. So that's part of what makes it fun.
And Moneyball hates Oscar Gonzalez.
That's right. He doesn't walk enough.
Doesn't walk enough.
All right, Terry, let's take one more. We got some time here. This one is from Lynn Hinnicky from Cleveland. I'm sorry, Lyle Hinnicky from Cleveland Heights. He says, "Hey, Terry, Phil Dawson was one of the coolest players to ever wear a Browns uniform. Was there ever any consideration by the team to retire his number? It's really sad to me that Deshaun Watson is wearing the same number." Yeah. Was there any thoughts on that? And did the Browns ever think about retiring his number?
I think they only retire Hall of Fame numbers. I have to check on that, but I believe that's where they're coming from. Just like, you know, Bernie's number, I think would be worth being retiring. That's the deal there. Well, you know, only Cleveland. I really believe it's only Cleveland do you have fans that kickers are cool. They like their kickers. They're mad when they don't have a good kicker. Only Cleveland with the biggest when I was at that media thing for all the rookies they had that day, the biggest media mob was around Cade York, the kicker, because they got to have a kicker. It's Cleveland. Cleveland it always should have a good kicker. I mean, it's Lou Groza's, you know, training complex and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's a fascinating love affair that has happened for years and years.
I do understand. Phil, I'm not saying he's a big friend of mine, but we are friends. And so I am not unbiased, but I also will say I'll stack his numbers against anybody else's just about too, except maybe Justin Tucker or somebody. But
well, and I mean, we talked about this too, but Cleveland fans appreciate how hard it is to kick down there.
Yes.
And the fact that he took it so seriously and really put everything he had into figuring out the wins and the best way to kick in at different ends. I think fans really appreciated that. It was a very Cleveland thing. So there we go. All right, Terry. I think that's going to do it. So tonight you're heading over to the Agora to hand out an award for the high school standouts event that we're hosting.
Yeah, the teacher of the year and the coach of the year. So I'm not going to say who they are because it's not announced, but it's a really cool thing to do. And I'm probably the only guy on our staff or woman who actually has a degree in secondary education, which is my degree of secondary ed, social studies, minor in English. I only took one generalism course. To do that, I had to teach 6 weeks in a junior high in Parma, and then I earned my certificate 6 months at Lincoln West. So 5 courses a day, 3 preps, 1 study hall. That was 1976 to 77, and I still remember it, and it made me very glad to become a writer after that because it was a lot harder than I thought.
Well, when you get over there tonight, you can try.
I will tell them, man, this is a lot harder than you think.
Well, have a great time over there. I think it's going to be a big crowd. Hopefully everybody can stay cool since it's, 90-some degrees today in Cleveland. So, all right, Terry, we're good. Anything else?
That'll do it.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We really appreciate it. We'll catch you next week on Terry's Talking.